Owning a small business can be overwhelming. How can your business stand out and connect with customers? Easy. Get Constant Contact. There's so many places to reach customers. Email, text messages, Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, live events. The list goes on. How are you, as the business owner, expected to own all of those channels? That's where Constant Contact comes in to help. With Constant Contact, you'll reach new audiences, grow your customer list, and communicate more effectively to sell more, raise more, and fast-track growth. I use this to grow my email list, and you should too. So get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Just go to ConstantContact.com right now. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall. ConstantContact.com.
Pro teams have millions to spend, and they don't always spend them wisely. But when it comes to a great shave, you don't have to shell out tons of cash. Harry's saw customers getting ripped off by the shaving industry with overpriced, underperforming products and decided to do something better. They found their own way to make beautifully designed razors for a fraction of the price of the other big brands, so you never wonder if you overpaid. Harry's shaving products look great, and the weighted handle makes shaving feel great too. I like to keep my beard neat, and Harry's always leaves me with a smooth yet crisp shave. Harry's quality is top-notch, thanks to German-engineered blades made in their own factory that stay sharp longer. You can get a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, foaming shave gel, and a travel cover for just $3 at harrys.com/bluewire. And Harry's has the highest customer satisfaction in the shaving industry, plus a convenient subscription option that you can cancel at any time. Getting the best doesn't mean spending the most when you shave with Harry's. Get started with a $13 trial set for just $3 at harrys.com/bluewire. That's harrys.com/bluewire for a $3 trial set.
You think that, like, Arthur Smith would know that when you draft Bijan Robinson, like, you use Bijan Robinson. You don't give him 7 carries in Carolina.
You got to have the coach and the GM on the same page. I think it's, like, bad when a coach is the GM. That usually doesn't work out. But
right.
If your GM is going to, let's face it, waste a top 10 draft pick on a running back, like, I think that that is kind of the wrong strategy with any running back at this
sure.
point.
Sure, use him though.
Right, exactly. If the GM thinks so highly of him that he's going to blow that top 10 pick on Bijan Robinson, then the coach has to be on board with, we're building our team around Bijan Robinson.
Right.
And obviously there was a disconnect there.
See, I do think, though, that you can have a successful situation where there's the same person as a GM and the coach. For instance, in my house, my wife is the GM and the coach, and things seem to be going all right.
Really? You consider what's happening in your house a success? I don't know. I don't know about that.
You know, that's an interesting point. You know, we're a 9-8. We're on the bubble.
You may get in, but it's only because you play in a weak division.
I think so. Yeah.
I don't even know what that means.
But it sounds about right.
I'm trying to make this analogy work. But fact is, I've never really been in your household. I've never met any of your kids or your wife. So I'm just playing along here.
Well, 2 of my kids are insane. So let's start there.
Okay. And is that the coach's fault or the GM's fault?
I think you just sign these kids to a long-term contract when they're born, and you know you're kind of stuck with them. You know,
right.
you got salary cap considerations.
Ooh, so now I'm getting an idea. What we need as a society to shift to short-term contracts with kids. If things aren't going, it's like 5-year contracts, and if things aren't looking good at the end of the first 5 years,
renew.
You can get
yeah.
out. Yeah.
Yeah, they become a free agent.
Yeah. Wow. Kid trades would change society. Although. Based on the fact that I pretty much hate everyone else's kids that I've ever met.
I think everyone
else's kids suck. So it's going to be tough to make too many trades based on the fact that whether you like or don't like your own kids, everyone agrees everybody else's kids are terrible.
Gamble on, fellas. Gamble on.
Welcome again to Gamble On, the weekly gambling podcast presented by USBets.com. I'm Eric Raskin, USBets Managing Editor and Media Director, and I'm joined by my co-host, USBets Senior Analyst Jeff Edelstein. This week on the season finale of Gamble On, our last episode of 2023, we'll talk about revenue and handle records getting smashed left and right, a market research report that indicates good things about the future of online gambling, and the latest odds on the 2024 presidential election and how they indicate that absolutely nothing matters.
Also, coming up on the pod, we're going to welcome ESPN's David Payne Purdom to talk about the year that was, and stay tuned for the end of the podcast for my plea for the new year. And here's a hint. It has to do with that presidential election thing Eric just mentioned. But first, as always, Eric, plenty of news to discuss.
Here's your Gamble On News of the Week, an inside look at the biggest stories in the world of gambling.
Reading out a list of handle and revenue numbers can make for pretty boring podcasting, but I'm hoping it's at least 10% less boring if I say the words state record in front of the numbers. And we have a lot of new state records that got set in the past week. In New Jersey, a state record $1.62 billion sports betting handle in November, as well as a state record $171.6 million in online casino revenue. In Pennsylvania, a state record $934.1 million in sports betting handle, powered past $900 million for the first time by the arrival of ESPN Bet. In Michigan, state records of $175.3 million in online casino revenue and $568.8 million in sports betting handle, again helped by ESPN Bet. In Massachusetts, $654 million sports betting handle, a state record. In Illinois, they just reported October, a month behind everyone else, and they set a state record with $1.16 billion in handle. Even some of the more minor betting states, like Louisiana, reported record handle in November. And as these reports were rolling in, our colleague Chris Altruda noticed they pushed the national sports betting handle for 23 past $100 billion for the first time in any calendar year. Seems to me the stories here are that there is such a thing as an ESPN Bet effect, and also that none of these states has hit full maturity yet. Jeff, what conclusions do you draw, and how have you chosen to celebrate the $100 billion handle milestone?
I'm not observant. No. I won't be celebrating.
Okay.
I will say this. I think, and this is something that I think I'm going to repeat in our chat with Mr. Purdom, but I don't think we're near maturity. At all. I think this whole sports betting thing is kind of like the stock market was like in the 90s. You know, there's the pros and there's the rank amateurs and there's, you know, there are a few people trying out E-Trade and stuff. But, you know, 20 years from 1999 is when Robinhood and no-fee trading turned like almost everybody with a few nickels to rub together, you know, into stock market traders. You know, and I kind of think the same thing might be slowly happening here. I think we still have a pretty long runway. I mean, and you look at like my state, New Jersey. You would think after 10 years of online casino, after 5+ years of sports betting, things would start leveling off.
Yeah.
But it's just not. You know, it just continues to go up. By the nature of what this is, it can't just be going up because the same people are betting more and more, because then you'd be hearing a lot more of the losers. It just seems like more and more people are dipping their toes in that. I mean, I really believe that.
Yeah, it seems that way. The New Jersey resurgence particularly intrigues me as well, because you'll recall when New York first legalized mobile betting, New Jersey handle tailed off a bit. It kind of seemed to be plateauing. They lost those customers who were biking across the bridge or what have you. It seemed that was one market that had pretty much seen its peak, and now here it is rising again. That's definitely an interesting sub-story here. I am drawn to the ESPN Bet effect. I'm not going to say that they're shifting the paradigm. It's nothing that dramatic, but this is the first time a new sports book has made this kind of impact and caused a little bump like this at any time post 2018. I think, you know, Fanatic Sportsbook's debut wasn't felt on this level. Barstool caused a momentary ripple, but not on this level. Obviously, I'm not counting DraftKings, FanDuel, MGM. They were all part of the debut of legal sports betting in 2018. Caesars, they got rebranded from William Hill, but I don't remember that having any big immediate impact. So ESPN Bet, look, it may or may not ever get above even 10% market share, but it's making its presence felt more clearly in its debut month than any other sportsbook launch or relaunch has.
It has. It is. I mean, you know, they're giving away, you know, the $250 in free bets.
Right.
For anybody, you know, even, you know, previous Barstool customers, which doesn't hurt. Doesn't hurt, obviously, that they are doing this in the heart of football season, right?
Right.
You know, talk to me in a year when it comes to the ESPN Bet effect. I mean, there is an effect. I think we're seeing it play out. We'll see. I'm not ready to draw any conclusions yet. Talk to me in a year.
As I said last week, I think it was last week that even talk to me after we see the December numbers, after they've had a full month and it's not all just like people making their bonus bets that they're getting off the top. I'd be curious to see their numbers even just for December. But yeah, you're absolutely right. This, we can't judge them on anything yet. They could far exceed expectations and be up above 10% in a year, or they could be just another struggling sports book in a year. But I'm just saying that, yeah, they've made a splash in their arrival that nobody else has done.
That's fair. Fair point.
So you didn't get the invite to Altruda's $100 billion party, huh? He's throwing a big blast in celebration, I guess. I feel bad. I got the invite. I don't know.
No, I didn't actually get an invite. Maybe, I mean, was it on Slack or?
No, it was a physical mailing. Looked like a bar mitzvah invitation. All fancy, yeah.
And they are getting fancy, those bar mitzvah invitations.
They are. Although there's also, it's now an even split between the fancy bar mitzvah invitations and the people who just send you an evite even to the bar bar mitzvah at this point.
All right. So, yeah, that's interesting. Yeah. All right. I'll keep my eyes open for the.
Okay.
The
yeah, invite. It could just be caught up in the mail. It could be arriving any day now. Sure. Weirdly, that unintended little sidetrack there into the idea of a paper invitation versus in an email sent invitation kind of leads into our next story. I'm reaching a bit, but here we go. Payment processing company Paysafe released a global market report last week and concluded that inflation and the cost of living are not impacting online gambling spending. I'll spare our listeners another barrage of numbers and instead just share the bottom line that, according to the research, at-home entertainment, such as online sports betting and online casino, has, quote, been impacted less by the changing economic climate, end quote, than other spending categories. Basically, if people are pulling back on their discretionary spending, it's not showing up in sports betting or online casino. It's showing up more in terms of eating out, taking trips, and unfortunately, donating to charity. I honestly don't know how much there is to discuss here. You know, it's a holiday week. There isn't much news happening. This probably wouldn't make the cut most weeks. But if you have any analysis, Jeff, I'd love to hear it. Or if you just want to talk about how your personal spending habits have or haven't changed in the current economic climate, go right ahead.
I don't know. It kind of does make sense. It's a lot cheaper to throw down a handful of $5 parlays than it is to, like, you know, head out to the Cheesecake Factory, you know. Yeah. By the way, I'm not a fan of chain restaurants, but yeah, Cheesecake stands out really for its fake fanciness. Every time I've ever eaten there, I made it feel like I don't belong there, like it's too fancy. It's a freaking chain restaurant in a mall.
Right.
Menu's too big also. I mean, it's ridiculous. How can anything be good when they have 10,000 things to choose from? It's ridiculous. What was I talking about? Done right. Your entertainment dollar really can go a lot further gambling than doing most other things, you know. Yeah. If you're doing it right, you know, if you're just playing, you know, and I for a lot of people, doing it right is throwing down a couple of $5 bets, you know, but that's hours of entertainment theoretically, you know.
Yeah, it's interesting relative cost wise what online gambling has become, because, you know, and we'll be talking politics soon, and so we can kind of leave the political angle out of is the economy bad or not so bad and whose fault is it and all that. But certainly everything is expensive right now. It wasn't so long ago you could get a cheap takeout meal for $5 and a mid-tier takeout meal for like 10 to 15. Now, unless you're buying a gas station hot dog and drinking tap water, I'm not sure a sub $10 meal exists. When we do takeout for a family of four, cheap now means I'm spending $50, and often I'm spending closer to $100, and not just because I'm like ordering the lobster or anything. It's just everything's expensive, all of which is maybe a roundabout way of saying betting $25 on a game feels like nothing if you step back and view it as money. If you view it as a percentage of a betting bankroll, that's a different story. If I've got $100 on a site, then $25 feels like a lot. But when I really think about what $25 is, even if I'm never the type to bet $100 on a game if it's not some kind of bonus bet or whatever. But if I really sit back and think about it, yeah, I can afford to lose $100 on a game. I'm about to spend it on dinner, you know?
Right. Yeah, and I think that's, so yeah, I mean, again, done right, sports bet, you know, seriously, for $5, like, four-leg parlay can keep you entertained for 8 hours.
Yeah, yeah, and maybe it will end up making you money.
Win. Exactly.
Right, you have that chance, which you don't have a chance of coming out richer after ordering at the Cheesesteak Factory, I don't believe.
Cheesecake Factory.
What did I say?
Cheesesteak Factory, which sounds delightful.
Is that what I said?
Yeah.
Huh.
I think. Well, at least that's what I heard. I'm hungry for a cheesesteak.
If I did say it, it could be my subconscious as a pescatarian, trying to tell me to go back to the meat or something. I don't know. Either way, the cheese factor is a problem in either scenario.
Sure.
I do just want to say, bottom line, as it relates to this market report, if it's a way of spending money without leaving your house, it's probably trending in the right direction. And if it requires leaving home to spend the money, then it's something that could be on shaky ground. I hadn't been inside our local mall post-COVID until a couple of months ago. I had to take my daughter there to get her eyebrows threaded. Apparently that's a thing women do. So I was at the mall in person for the first time since, I think, 2019. It was sad. It was almost.
Yeah, your mall sucks. I know. Oxford Valley?
Oxford Valley, yeah.
Yeah. Oxford Valley is falling off the face. Quaker Bridge is on the up. I'm telling you.
Oh, okay. All right. See, I was thinking this was like all malls in an online ordering, because Oxford Valley was like almost post apocalyptic, like the mall on The Last of Us. I almost felt like I was walking around. There are like so many vacant spots where a store used to be, hardly any people walking around. The people who are there, not exactly the social elite, so I'm glad to hear that this isn't necessarily every mall everywhere, but either way, our industry seems in a good place because it's all online.
Right.
So, okay. Now on to our third topic. As we were reminded a couple of weeks ago when Patrick Everson joined us, the topic of presidential election betting is a real conversation stimulator. So let's do a bit of that without Patrick. Big news, at least theoretically, in the political world on Tuesday night. The Colorado State Supreme Court ruled that because he engaged in an insurrection, according to the 14th Amendment, Donald Trump is not eligible to return to office and his name won't appear on the Republican primary ballot in Colorado. At least that's the status for now, though this is being appealed to the U.S. Supreme Court, so there's a chance this gets overturned and Trump is on the ballot in every state, or there's a chance it doesn't and other states follow Colorado's lead.
Pro teams have millions to spend, and they don't always spend them wisely. But when it comes to a great shave, you don't have to shell out tons of cash. Harry's saw customers getting ripped off by the shaving industry with overpriced, underperforming products and decided to do something better. They found their own way to make beautifully designed razors for a fraction of the price of the other big brands, so you never wonder if you overpaid. Harry's shaving products look great, and the weighted handle makes shaving feel great, too. I like to keep my beard neat, and Harry's always leaves me with a smooth yet crisp shave. Harry's quality is top-notch, thanks to German-engineered blades made in their own factory that stay sharp longer. You can get a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, foaming shave gel, and a travel cover for just $3 at harrys.com/bluewire. And Harry's has the highest customer satisfaction in the shaving industry, plus a convenient subscription option that you can cancel at any time. Getting the best doesn't mean spending the most when you shave with Harry's. Get started with a $13 trial set for just $3 at harrys.com/bluewire. That's harrys.com/bluewire for a $3 trial set.
The latter outcome would seem very consequential for an election, but the betting odds that predict it, at least for now, say this is yet another story that makes no difference for Trump. His odds of winning the presidency weren't impacted by any of his four criminal indictments, and they aren't being impacted by this, other than Nikki Haley gaining a tiny bit of ground on him for the Republican nomination. Jeff, do you think the odds movement, or lack thereof, is in step with reality? It's often said that the betting odds tell you better than the polls what's going to happen. What do you think? Are you surprised none of this stuff appears damaging to Trump? And do any of the polls or odds really mean anything 11 months from the election with this many variables on both sides?
Well, since you asked, all right, listen, this is very interesting to me. So Predicted has Trump at 41 cents, Biden at 39 cents, close enough to a toss-up.
Right.
DraftKings up in Canada, where you can bet this, little different. They got Trump at plus 125, Biden at plus 200. Put in predicted terms, 44.5 cents to 33 cents, right? Hmm. So in the DraftKings Canadian market, people watching this, Trump is, you know, a little bit of a heavy favorite. Yeah. But what's most interesting to me about this, and like, you know, this it's nutty to me. In both these cases, there's like a 20 to 23% chance. I mean, these markets tell us that it's going to be a third option, right? That right. is not there yet, you know, whether it be RFK, whether it be Gavin Newsom, whether it be Nikki Haley, right?
Right.
But in my mind, it seems impossible that it's not going to be either Trump or Biden, right? I mean, is this the ARB opportunity of a lifetime right now?
To just bet on both of them in Canada.
Or here, you could take buy them both, both unpredicted, spend the 80 cents, you're cashing out at a buck. You know?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. But that flies in the face of your joke about how one could be dead and the other could be in jail.
Well,
and
we I know. I understand that. But I mean, I think so. You know, what you mentioned is that, you know, how, you know, it's thought that, you know, the odds market is going to tell us more than polls. If that's true, it's telling us there's like a 20 to 23% chance that one of these guys is not on the ballot. Right. Which means there's a 20 to 23% chance, according to the betting markets, that shit is going to get even more fucked up than we think it is going to be right now.
Right.
You know, so yeah. I don't know. I mean, that's a huge fucking number. 20 to 23% that it's not one of these two.
Yeah.
That's a huge number.
You're right. For an election where in a normal year where there typically, we don't have a clear front runner from the non-incumbent side to this extent this early. So so I guess it's not a huge number in the big picture in the typical sense. Like
this is not typical,
right? But this is not the way that Trump has the Republican nomination seemingly sewn up, barring something that keeps him out of the race. There are so many weird factors here. I do have to ask just about your line that one dead, one in jail, and we don't know which is which.
Right.
Maybe I'm just stuck in my liberal bubble, but what exactly could Biden possibly be in jail for? Or is it just to make the joke work?
It's just to make the joke work.
Okay.
You know?
All right.
But,
all
I
right.
mean, you know, I don't know. Maybe, you know, who knows what they're going to uncover and, you know, let's all hope we don't have a son like Hunter. You know, I mean, who needs a sacrifice? You know what I'm saying?
Right. Okay. That's fair, but I don't know that it lands Joe Biden in jail.
It probably
in jail.
Doesn't land him in jail.
But
on the Republican side, what keeps Trump away from the nomination? Like, I don't think anything, including jail, keeps him away from the nomination.
He's not going to jail. Right. Well, that I tend to agree with. So, all right. So on the Biden side, there's dying, right? But there's also, I don't think this is likely, but I think dropping out because his approval rating is so low that his party convinces him to step aside, that is not impossible.
Getting late.
Yeah, it's still 11 months away. I mean, normally, like, you know, in a primary season, it's not late. We're 6 months from when a non-incumbent party would be figuring out who its nominee is going to be. But yeah, Trump, you have jail, you have not permitted to appear on the ballot, and I guess somewhere way, way down at like a 0.001% chance, you have his party rallying and coming together and unifying against him and deciding to get back to something resembling believing in democracy. That's the longest shot, I think, of the options for why Trump doesn't show up on the ballot. But if he is actually in jail, which I agree with you, he won't be just based on the timing of it more than anything. I think they take him off the bat. I think the Republicans run someone else, right?
I don't know. I don't know how the nitty gritty that works. But all I know is that I don't know. I'm still going back to this ARB opportunity. I think it's an awesome bet. I really do. I think it's you're betting that one of them is going to win, right?
Right.
And so even if one of them drops off the ballot, there's the other one still sticking around.
Right.
You know, what are the odds of both of them dropping off the ballot? I don't know. It seems.
Now there's a fun parlay bet as well. If they offered neither Trump nor Biden appears on the ballot, I wonder what kind of odds you could get on that.
Yeah, I'm sure they'd be juicy.
Yes.
You know?
With regard to this week's news of the Colorado thing. You know, if Trump is the Republican Party's planned nominee, and somehow he is not available on the ballot, if people don't have the option to vote for him, it's going to get real ugly in America. Now, that isn't the court's concern. They should rule based on the facts and the law and not based on fear of the consequences. But you want to see this country splintered more than it already is, and something resembling a civil war and just like insurrection coming to your hometown. That one really scares me. As someone who I'll just say very openly, in case anyone hasn't figured it out, as someone who very much wants to see anyone other than Trump win the 2024 election, I'd feel a lot better about the jail path for society. You know, right. Now signs point toward him manipulating the system to get all the court cases stalled until after the election, at which point, if he wins, he pardons himself and it all goes away. And by the way, we never have another election for as long as he's alive. But if one of the criminal charges could go to trial in time and he gets convicted, that's a path to getting him off the ballot that there still will be an uprising, but I think it's much less scary than the one we see if people simply are not allowed to vote for him.
And a Merry Christmas to all. Jesus. You got me worried now. I don't know what's going to happen. Nobody knows. Nobody knows what's going to happen. Right. I don't know what's going to happen. All I know is I think there's a pretty good opportunity to make some money if you want to arm. I don't think. But what I'm saying is I don't think that there's a 20 to 23% chance that neither one of them are going to win.
Yeah, you're probably right. You're probably right.
There's a 5% chance, maybe right. At the most.
Yeah, I think you're right. And my view on election betting in recent years has been that I couldn't possibly bring myself personally to bet it. I mean, I'm speaking as someone who tends not to bet on Eagles games because I'm already emotionally invested. Right. So, you know, even if I suddenly could log on to FanDuel and place a bet on this election, I wouldn't want to do it, even if something was screaming value. I'm just not looking for any additional investment in this outcome. But the ARB situation is an interesting one, I guess. That it's a way to sort of not change. If I get to a point where I'm winning the same amount, whether it's Biden or Trump, then I've taken the emotion. But then I'm still risking then the financial investment if it's only one of the two of them on the ballot. So I don't know. I'm staying the hell away from all this, and I have absolutely no idea what the hell is going to happen next November.
I still can't believe that we're living. If you had said to anybody at any time, like in the last 60 years, we're going to throw a Kennedy in the Democrats, for a second or two, and then we're going to say no, we don't want you. I mean, how is that even possible? This RFK, if he didn't go wacky, he would have won this thing in a landslide.
Yeah, he could have had a shot on the Kennedy name, but the Kennedy name has been sort of strangely co-opted because the Republican Party believes both John F. Kennedy and John F. Kennedy Jr. are still alive and are showing up in Dealey Plaza any minute now. So, there's the whole Kennedy thing has gone off the rails.
I think the whole thing has gone off the rails.
Yes.
I think that's a good
thing. This podcast has gone off the rails.
Yes.
It's time to welcome a special guest from the world of gambling. Let's get to the Gamble On interview.
For our final podcast episode of the year, we figured we'd use the interview segment to reflect on some of the biggest stories of the year that was, and so to lend his recollections and insights, we now welcome as fine a journalist as you'll find in the sports betting space. From
Thank
ESPN,
you very much. Oh, I'm sorry.
A tie for finest journalist in the sports betting space. From ESPN, like any experienced sports bettor, Payne is his middle name, our friend David Payne Purdom. David, welcome back to Gamble On.
Thank you for having me, guys. I appreciate it.
So here's where I want to start. It's a trend story, not a singular news event story. But one thing that really stood out to me in 2023 was sportsbook win rates continuing to go up. Our colleague Chris Altruda has a tremendous database of all this on Sports Handle. And in 2018, 19, and 20, the win rate was right around 7% each year. In 2021, it hit 7.52%. In 2022, 8.06%. And for 2023 so far, it's 9.34%. It really exploded this year. To me, this is a huge story and a worrying one. Am I making too much of it, or do you also consider it a huge deal, David? And is it crazy to ask sportsbooks to try not to win quite so much?
I would say it's crazy to ask any business to try to make less money, but I don't think that's going to happen. It's odd, and I want to give the sports leagues credit. All their officials, when I was talking to them back when we were getting ready to do legalization, they kept on telling me, oh, no, we're going to have higher win rates in these other states than Las Vegas, because the Nevada average win rate for decades, right around 5%, maybe a 6%, maybe get up there, right? But I was like, okay, so you're not going to just make people be worse bettors. They're going to win around the same rate. You're no way, unless you can get them to bet more parlays. And that's what happened, has happened, right? Especially these same gun parlays where we don't even know what the real margins are, right? They don't really release each leg's price. I remember when Hard Rock had that big same game parlay. What was it, Texans Bengals? It was like a $6 million win. It was one of the largest I ever seen. And I tried to get them to tell me what were the price on each of the legs, so I could try to see what the correlation they put into it. And they were like, we don't really usually reveal that. Mm. And so I think that tells you quite a bit right there that it's probably pretty high, and that's inflated. Is it worrisome? Some people think it is. I talked to some people offshore about this topic, and you know, they're like, we think the public money is going to run out eventually. If you keep running, that churn rate is going to be too great, and you're going to run out of public money for this. I'm not so sure I'm to that point yet. Is it 2 to 3% more money? Is that really going to bankrupt the whole public? I don't know. So I'm a little bit skeptical that it's going to crash and burn, but it is something notable, as you mentioned, that it has increased so much.
Yeah, when we had Adam Levitan from Establish the Run on a few months back, I kind of asked him whether he thought the parlay trend was a problem, and he raised the point that it doesn't worry him at all, because it's mostly people betting tiny little amounts to try to win a lot. And so that's sort of where you're landing, that obviously there are the occasional huge parlays where people risk a big chunk of their bankroll, but that's mostly a very slow bleed of the recreational bettor that you're not too concerned about, it sounds like.
I would agree with that. And I've always, at the beginning, I thought that, okay, people betting $5 to try to win a lot, maybe that's the best use of their money, instead of guys that are trying to grind this out and they are betting too much of their bankroll at once. I mean, as Jeff knows, Jeff, what's your bankroll percentage? 2 to 5% per bet, right? So $100,000, right?
Something like that, yeah.
Something like that. But if you bet that little bit of amount on there, I think your bankroll lasts longer. And so the one thing I do worry about the parlays, though, are the people that hit 9 of 10 legs and are on the verge of winning $20,000 off their $10 bet, and they can't handle it. They lose control and they just go off on these crazy tangents, and maybe that starts them down a downward spiral. So that does concern me a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, I just going to jump in. You know, I'm working on a story, so I guess I'll lay claim to it so Perm doesn't jump me on it here. But, you know, I forget the guy's name, that hedge fund manager who, like, was going to short all, like, the DraftKings stock, and now he's like, saying that, you know what, because of this win rate, you know, these stocks are going to be fine. And I start dawning on me, I think that I wonder if we are, you know, we're so – the three of us and everyone in the industry, we're so in, you know, neck deep in it. But I think there might be like a second boom coming in sports betting, much in the same way that like you see it in the stock market, right? You go back 20 years, nobody was investing in the stock market unless you were an investor. You know, then E-Trade comes along, and now, you know, and fast forward to Robinhood, and who's not playing around in the stock market? You know what I mean? I wonder if sports betting is like, that hasn't happened yet necessarily, where like every Tom, Dick, and Harry and their wives are like, you know what, $5 here, $10 here, what's the big deal? You know, which I think in the end would also continue to increase the win rate for sports books, but as you've both been saying, at little cost to the quote investor, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think we were going to talk about the Taylor Swift impact a little bit, and how much that has grown, the Travis Kelce prop bets and all the things that the sports books did. I've asked them over and over for data on who were these people that were suddenly betting Travis Kelce. props. I haven't got any yet, but I think that kind of feeds into your hypothesis there, right?
Right.
That
we are getting. So let's ask you this. I mean, so are you a Swifty? Let's start there.
I like that meme song. I have that on my soccer team's playlist. I coach a U11 girls soccer team. So we have that on there, and we always talk about not being mean. But other than that, I'm not a big supporter. I'm more of a classic rock type guy, I guess.
Sure. No, I feel you. I feel it. But this under 11 girl soccer team, I imagine you're surrounded by Swifties.
Correct. Right.
So, I mean, what do you think? I mean, what do you make of this? I mean, do you think that, like, you know, was the Taylor Swift effect? And, you know, we wrote about it. I mean, you know, all the books were reporting much higher, you know, handle on Kelce bets and Chiefs bets and stuff. Do you think that that's a once in a lifetime thing, or do you think it's like a canary in the coal mine thing? Like, I guess going back to what I was talking about before.
Well, I think it's dwindled off, right? It's cooled off. It's not as dramatic as it was to begin with. So will it
not just the Swift? Not just the Swift thing. Right. I'm sorry to interrupt, but like the idea of people who outside of our world saying, let me dip my toes in this world.
Yeah. I mean, I think those kind of storylines, those kind of narratives, anytime you talk to a sports book about a game that's gotten, gets a lot more handled than they thought about, there's some sort of alternative motive or narrative, I should say. I guess Deion Sanders would be a good example too. At the beginning of the year, those games were ridiculously heavily bet. In fact, DraftKings, I think Colorado, Oregon was the second most heavily bet game, only behind Ohio State, Michigan, and Oregon, Colorado. Come on. I mean, nobody would have thought that would be like that. So anytime you get that additional narrative that kind of transcends into the general public, it will come about. Is it going to be a long-term thing? No, I think it'll come and go as each little storyline pops up.
So somebody who wasn't that interested in it and they come in, do they stick around? I guess that's really, you know, that's the long-term question. I don't know.
Kind of 50-50, right? I would assume some do, some don't. Some good in there and they lose quickly and they're like, I'm done with this. Right. Like, this was fun. I hit my first parlay and I'm going to stick around. So I would say it's based on their success.
Yeah.
If you get the Travis Kelce first touchdown score in that one time that you as a Swifty decide to place a bet on him, maybe that keeps you around a while. But I guess the other sort of crossover thing in that realm would be the non-sports betting, the, you know, Oscars, Emmys, that sort of stuff that's available in a few states. And what we were talking about on a recent podcast with another guest, the political betting, like that seems like those could reach a huge audience that otherwise may not be willing to dip its toes in sports betting.
Oh yeah. I mean, the Vegas bookmakers have long said that if we are ever allowed to take bets on the presidential election, it would be by far the largest betting market, way greater, larger than the Super Bowl. So if political betting ever comes into it, and I don't know if it ever will, but it will be massive.
Yeah. So getting back to some of the big stories of this year, we haven't heard about an NFL player getting caught violating the league's gambling policy yet this season during the fall here. But back in the spring, that was the biggest running story in the industry. I'm curious for your perspective on, first off, back then, several months ago, trying to cover all that news as violations were unearthed one after another. And do you take these quiet last few months as a sign that the crackdown worked and NFL players know the rules and the consequences now, and we won't see very many more gambling suspensions in the league?
Yeah, that spring was crazy. I mean, that late April, early May, we had all the NFL suspensions, and right on top of that, we had all the ones in Iowa, the collegiate kids.
Right.
And right on top of that, we had the Alabama baseball coach get fired for his link to a sports betting scandal. It just kept on coming and coming. I was like, oh my gosh. And then again, June, we had another wave. And that was the latest wave. You're right. We haven't seen any this season. And if you notice, we didn't see any really last season. They waited to the off season to announce these. So I don't know if that's kind of the plan now. I do know that these investigations take a while. They go through lots of steps and they want to make sure and give anyone that's suspected of violating the policy their due process. So they work on a part. The NFL did adjust their penalties for it. They upped, if you bet on the NFL, it's now 2 years, right? An average NFL career, I looked this up before it came on, was like 3.5 years, right? You lose 2 years of that, you're a, you know, an average player like most of these guys that have been caught up in this. We hadn't heard about any of Simon aside from Calvin Ridley. There wasn't really a huge, huge name. So I do think that that deterrent has caught everybody's attention, and probably the league's efforts to their credit, to their efforts to make sure that everybody understands more and more and more. I think you and I, we've all talked about how it's hard to have much sympathy for guys that are betting on games involving their own team. You know, that's wrong. You should not be doing that, right? Anybody that doesn't know that, that seems a little disingenuous to me. The guys that were betting on NBA basketball game and they were in the locker room or out in the parking lot, I can understand that. So I guess my answer is yes, we will see some more. I do expect them to be fewer and fewer.
Okay.
You know, one thing, you know, we were talking about what did happen. Let's talk about what didn't happen. And, you know, this is on the legislative front. 20% of the nation resides in California and Texas, and they are sports betting deserts. And, nothing good happened in either state this year, although maybe the Mark Cuban news a little bit might move Texas. But what do you think? I mean, what are you hearing? Do you think there's any hope for these two states to come online with us sports betting folk?
Yeah, you took my point. I do think the Cuban Sands deal is meaningful. I think that had some, at least some part of that was designed to give Sands a more local footprint, a more clout locally. And so with them owning with the Mavericks, then I do think that Texas will likely, you know, certainly introduce legislation in 2025. They're on that 2-year circle where they don't have one this year, but 2025, I do believe it's coming. And I think the momentum is there for Texas to get this done. California, I don't even know what to think there. Until the tribal gaming community decides how they want it done and what they want it done, and they put it forward and they put their money behind everything behind it and everything is by their rules, then maybe we have a chance. But they had their own bill last year too, right? They did have a bill. It was only retail in person, but they did have a bill. And it didn't even come close. So maybe voters in California just aren't ready. Eventually, so much money, right? So much money. It's got to come on board, but I don't know when.
Yeah, it seems crazy because just generally speaking, like in, you know, American culture, California always seems to be like first out of the gate with so much, you know? And here they are certainly lagging behind. But, yeah, I think I was speaking to our colleague Jill Dorson. I think there's 109 or 114, some crazy number of tribes. And they all, you know, trying to get them all on the same page is, you know, the difficult enough. And then to get the voters or to get the legislature and then, you know, it sounds like a heavy lift, which is a shame because, yeah, as you say, there is just a boatload of money in them Dar Hills.
Yeah, I don't think that that latest initiative by the guys that just kind of came out, the poker bros, the guys were calling them, and just came out of nowhere. I don't see that getting very far, but it's surprising that they would even bring it if they thought there was no chance. So,
right. No.
Yeah, it seems like the tribal reaction to that has been pretty clear that this ain't the one. So on just a related front of one other big state that we haven't talked about yet with Florida, do you think there's any hope that in the next few years becomes not a monopoly? Or do you feel like this is the way it's looking for the foreseeable future? There's Hard Rock Bet and there's nothing else.
It's a good question. DraftKings and FanDuel have presence through the daily fantasy there. Will they be able to expand? Again, I think you have to agree to the wishes of the tribal community and the compacts that they have on board and show respect and make sure that you work with them. Will they be able to do that? I think eventually, yeah. I think we will see some other operators in there. When that will happen, I'm not sure.
And then, of course, there's your state. You live in Georgia. With fingers crossed for you guys. Every year we get kind of excited that this is the year for Georgia. I don't know if you have a leaning on that one before we let you go.
I think we're getting done this year. I really do think we get done this year. I've kept in contact with some people that are pretty influential on this, and they're confident. They're more confident than they were the last couple years, and they were pretty confident then. So I do think that Georgia gets it done this year.
All right. Nice positive note to end on. Well, David, thanks for coming on the podcast once again. Always great talking to you. I'll let all the listeners know if you're not following him on Twitter, you can find him at David Purdom. And of course, read him on ESPN.com sports betting page. Thanks again, David, and happy holidays.
Happy holidays, everybody. Thank you.
Two men. Two men. $10,000. Will they run it up or blow it all? It's time to check in on the Gamble On Bankroll.
We'll get to bagels and lock shortly, but first let's update our betting bankroll. And I had a winning week, but there's no I in team. So, you know, let's not dwell on that. Honestly, I only came out in the black this week because of boxing. How are we both so bad at betting on the NFL? I don't understand.
It's been a horrible year.
It really has. Quickly, your bets, Jeff. Easton Stick touchdown, nope, lost $25. Justin Fields touchdown, nope, lost $50. Fields over on rushing yards, lost $58. Yep. The Jets failed in your three-team teaser. The other two covered.
Stupid. Yeah,
it's not that it was stupid, but the amount. You lost $100. Yeah, I think that's where I'd criticize the bet, that it should have been a $50 bet.
It's a fake bankroll. Doesn't matter. We can make it $1 million.
Come on now. Come on. Yeah, that ruins the thought experiment.
I'm angry.
All right. I understand. Not as angry as I should be at you for betting on a Jets Pats money line parlay.
Sure.
Cost us
$50.
Well,
I was trying to make a lot of money back in one.
I know. Well, isn't that what Captain Jack specifically said not to do?
Exactly that. Yes.
All right. On to my bets. I had Bears plus +3 and, I still don't know how Mooney didn't catch that Hail Mary, but we push there and get our money back. I took the Thunder on the money line against the Kings, lost $60, but then I got our lone win of the week on boxing, minus -215 favorite Bam Rodriguez knocked out Sonny Edwards, so we won $100. We lost another $243 this week. We're now down by 5,083. We also have 29.26 on hold in futures bets.
Futures, yes. We have how much we have to bet left?
1,991. That's right. It is a year. A pretty good year. Maybe that's a sign that things are going to turn around. We're the 90s, right up our alley. When
that's
we were, if we had a prime, that was it.
Bum, ba, da, 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 da.
91, a little before Friends.
All right. Well, yeah, sure. A little bit.
Can you give me a bow, 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 bow.
Yep.
That's the more fitting. Wow. Speaking.
Do you ever? Yeah. Do you ever wonder why I can't win a football bet?
I want to see where this stand up routine is headed.
That was it.
What's the deal with the Falcons?
What's the deal with me not being able to win a bet?
All right. Anyway, shall I get to my first bet?
Let's just quickly get through this, please.
Okay. All right. If the 49ers stay reasonably healthy, I just don't see anybody beating them in the playoffs. That's where I'm the angle I'm coming in at for my first bet here. It's crazy that they lost three games in a row in the middle of the season. They were missing some key players in some of those games. But if they stay healthy, the talent gap between them and every other team actually may be enough to overcome variance and prevent them from losing any single game, I think. But, you know, with the risk of injury, we saw it last year early in the NFC title game when Purdy got hurt. I don't see any point in betting them at plus +225 to win the Super Bowl. If you got them earlier in the season, about plus +700 or something, good for you. But, you know, I don't see any value in betting them now. Instead, I think the move is to risk a little to win a lot on an exact Super Bowl matchup. Chris Berman, I hope you're listening. This is the Super Bowl matchup you've been calling for the last 35 years or so. This is the year. It's going to be 49ers and Bills. The AFC is wide open. Every contender is flawed. The Bills have momentum. You know, last year, everybody believed in them. This year, they swooned so bad that everybody wrote them off, and maybe that's the best thing for them. At both FanDuel and DraftKings, there's the same price, and it's better than I found anywhere else. Exact result of 49ers to beat the Bills in the Super Bowl is plus +2,200. So let's bet 25 to win 550. And of course, if those two teams do make it, then we can assess whether we feel like the Bills have a chance and we can consider a little hedge. But for now, it's 25 to win 550, 49ers over Bills.
All right. I actually really do like that. It's a nice bet. I'm going to go with some stuff tonight here.
Okay.
This will be like one little thing. Cooper Kupp, give me an anytime touchdown at bet365. He's plus +140.
Okay.
I think he's scoring the last three games. This Rams team is definitely coming into form. So give me a cup anytime touchdown, $50 at plus 140.
Okay.
I want to do the same for Rashid Shaheed at plus 375 for $25 to get in the end zone. Mm-hmm. Rams play zone at a monstrous rate. Shaheed is a zone killer. He benefits from having Chris Olave back in the lineup. So give me a Shaheed touchdown. And then for $20 at plus 822, let's merge them together and parlay.
Okay. Parlay plus 822, $20. All right. I have not thought enough about this game to have any opinion on whether that's those are good bets or bad bets, but I approve of the bet amounts in any case.
Thank you.
It's a start. We got to start somewhere. It's
moral victory.
Yes. All right. There is a massive boxing card this Saturday in Riyadh, Saudi Arabia. The sports washing there continues. Boxing being just the right soulless sport for the Saudi regime to inject its blood money into. Eight significant fights on this card. It's headlined by two separate bouts featuring major heavyweight stars, Deontay Wilder against Joseph Parker and Anthony Joshua against Otto Valine. And it's been reported that Wilder and Joshua have agreed to terms for a massive showdown in March, again in Saudi Arabia, if they both win on Saturday. I see three reasonably priced live dogs on this card. Several of the fights are gross mismatches. I will get to those with my next bet. But here, I'm focusing on three fights where the underdog has a real chance. One is one of the two co-main events. Valine, he's a legit good heavyweight fighter. We had a nice win on him when he was mispriced as an underdog in his previous fight. And Anthony Joshua is exceptionally big and strong and talented, but has serious confidence and identity issues. Valine is absolutely capable of beating him. He's priced as high as plus 320 at FanDuel. I'm nervous about him getting screwed one way or another because everyone wants to see Joshua versus Wilder next. But at plus 320, I think there's still a tiny bit of value there. So $30 to win 96 on Valine, and then Jarrell Big Baby Miller. There are actually multiple big babies in heavyweight boxing, believe it or not, Jeff. This isn't the one we've bet on before. Different big baby here. He's plus 240 against Daniel Dubois. I think he's a little more live than that, so we'll go with another $30 to win 72. And deeper on the undercard, a battle of unbeatens, 18-0 Arslanbek Makhmudov versus 23-0 Agit Kabayel. I'm not surprised Kabayel is the underdog. I am surprised we can get him as high as plus 650 at DraftKings. He has a better shot than that, I think. So $20 to win 130 there. Three underdog bets. If one of the three wins, we win.
Great. You haven't lost a boxing bet yet since you took the Captain Jack strategy. Huh?
That is true. I'm expecting that streak to end here because the chances of winning all three underdogs. But if one of the three wins, it counts as a win. Yeah. Okay.
All right. Niners clearly are the cream of the NFC, right? That's the cream of the NFL, right?
Yeah.
Would you say the Eagles are flawed?
The Eagles are flawed. I will admit it.
Would you say the Cowboys are flawed?
The Cowboys certainly are flawed.
Would you say the Lions are flawed?
The Lions, yes, they too are flawed.
What team did I say is rounding into form?
Is there an NFC team that you're leading me toward here?
The Rams. The Rams.
Oh, yes. Yes, you did.
Form,
right.
Okay. Yep. Mm-hmm. They've won four of their last five. Only loss was that overtime thriller against Baltimore. Uh-huh. Okay. Uh-huh. I will take Sean McVay against any coach in the NFL at any time. Mm-hmm. Okay. Is it worth $20 at plus 4,000 to win the NFC? It is. $20. The Rams to win the NFC at Caesars. I don't think anyone wants to play the Rams right now. I really don't.
Yeah, that's, you know, it's not bad. Plus 4,000 to win the NFC. They got to get into the playoffs, which their actual playoff odds are probably right around even money right now.
A little better. They got the Saints this week, then they're at the Giants next week.
Okay.
And at San Francisco in week 18 in a game that probably won't mean anything for San Francisco.
Yeah, they may need to win it to clinch the top seed and the bye. But you're right. There's a good chance they'll already have that wrapped up. So okay, I like this. Yeah, they could be that team that and then you're kind of probably banking on something going wrong injury-wise with the 49ers to open the door.
Although,
but the Rams can potentially beat any other team at full strength.
Yeah, and you know, this is a team. I mean, this offense is condensed and clear. Like, you know, you trust Stafford, you got Cooper Kupp, you know, Puka Nacua has been dynamite. Uh-huh. Kyron Williams is Christian McCaffrey 2.0 all of a sudden. Mm-hmm. A decent enough defense. And McVay, I don't know. Stranger things have happened for you.
Yeah. All right. I think it's the right price, and you're only risking $20. You have my full support.
There you go.
All right.
Thank you.
For my last bet, more boxing. I did a few small bets on underdogs there a minute ago. Now I'm going to do one bigger parlay bet on huge favorites on five outcomes that I see as sure things. Although, you know, parlays, if I'm wrong about one of them, we're fucked. But here goes. I mentioned the other main event of that card, Wilder versus Parker. Wilder will win this fight by knockout. That's like at least 90% likely, and it's a minus 380 leg. So we'll start there. Filip Hrgović is in an absolute cakewalk mismatch against Mark Demory. We'll take Hrgović by KO also. Light heavyweight Dmitry Bivol has an easy fight against Lyndon Arthur. He's minus 2,000 on the three-way money line. That means three-way, meaning if it's a draw, we lose the bet, but it won't be a draw. Let's throw that in. Same with cruiserweight champ Jai Opataya, massive favorite over Ellis Zorro. Throw him in on a three-way money line bet. And lastly, 3 days later, December 26th, the great junior featherweight champ and future Hall of Famer Naoya Inoue faces Marlon Topalis. Topalis is a fine fighter, but he will get his ass kicked here. Inoue has scored the knockout in 14 of his last 15 fights. The one exception, he was fighting through a broken orbital bone and won a decision instead of a knockout, and then had a rematch and knocked the guy out in two rounds. He's knocking Topalis out. So that's the bet. Wilder, Hrgović, and Inoue all by KO. Bivol and Opataya just to win. The price is going to sound shitty, except they're all sure things. So comes out to minus 105. Let's bet $105 to win 100.
Yeah, the price is not great, but okay.
No, they really do have to be sure things to do a five-leg parlay like that.
Sure. All right. Well, you know your boxing, that's for sure. So I trust you all the way.
Okay, thank you.
My final bet is just a straight-ahead over. $105 to win 100. Over 43.5 in the Bears Cardinals game. The Cardinals don't have a defense, and the Cardinals offense has been playing pretty well. I don't know. This game just has, you know, it has like a little bit of wacky game written all over it to me. Two teams not playing for a whole heck of a lot. I don't know. Two mobile quarterbacks. I don't know. I like it. Over 43.5. Okay. That's it.
All right. It occurs to me as you were talking about your Rams props for that game and and this bet here that because I'm leaving for vacation and won't be around to play any DFS or make any bets over the weekend or whatever, I really am. I'm just now realizing I've paid no attention to this week's football games. I haven't listened to any podcasts about them. I'm totally checked out on it. If you had asked me who are the Bears playing this week, I would have needed, 31 guesses to land on Arizona, probably. All right, for the last time this year, we now do bagels and locks. Jeff, you won last week with the Bengals -2.5 on the right side of the hook. Never a doubt there. you're now 8-5. I was wrong about Bills Cowboys going over. I didn't see the Bills defense keeping the Dallas offense in check the way they did. I'm down to 7-6. And I'm up first this week, and I've decided I stink at over-under point totals. I really don't know what I'm doing there. All my hunches are wrong, and of course, there's no science to what I'm doing. So I'm staying away from totals this week. Just going with a standard spread bet, and I know you're going to agree with this one, Jeff, based on everything you've said so far on the pod. The lock of the week, it's tonight. It's the Rams -4 against the Saints. They're both 7-7, but they're not evenly matched. McVay versus Dennis Allen is a mismatch. Stafford versus Carr is somewhat of a mismatch. The Saints are just not very good. They're 4-9-1 against the spread this year. I don't know why the odds makers treat them like they're good, but they're very much not. They simply play in the worst division. This line should be more like Rams -6. Even factoring in Thursday night football weirdness, they will cover 4 against the sub-mediocre Saints team. The Rams are my lock of the week.
I mean, so they're my lock of the week, too. Is it bad to have two locks?
No. We're allowed to have the same lock.
I think then let's lock it down. Rams -4. Translation, Saints 43-7.
I was going to say, this is the ultimate test for our listeners of the fact that we have the same lock. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? This is if you ever wanted to try to fade us big, this is the week to do it. All right.
For sure.
All right. That'll do it for this episode of Gamble On. Thanks, everybody out there, for listening. And thanks again to our guest, David Purdom. You can find me on Twitter at Eric Raskin and Jeff at Jeff Edelstein, and follow US Bets at US_bets. Go to usbets.com for all the latest news and analysis from the world of gambling, and subscribe to this podcast on Megaphone, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or anywhere else. And with that, Jeff, for the final time in 2023, please take us out.
You know, Eric, I'm old enough to remember when you could disagree with someone about their politics and still be able to have a few beers with them, you know? Feels like those days are gone as we turn the calendar to 2024, and it's the most important presidential election of our lifetime, which seemed to happen with alarming regularity these days.
Yep.
But, you know, while we're headed down this path, let's remember this, right? We're all Americans. We're all human. We all want the same things at the end of the day. Someone to love us, a roof over our heads, food on the table, a little money in our pocket, right? So with that in mind, on this, our last pod of 2023, let's turn off social media, let's turn off cable news, and instead, let's head on down to the local diner. Let's sit on a stool, let's engage our neighbors in conversation. Sure, we're going to disagree, but that doesn't mean we can't be civil to one another. Also, write in Dwayne The Rock Johnson for president. He's our only hope. Talk to you in 24. Until then, gamble on.